Blog Talk Radio.
Fontaine and Transforming Your Life. Day 16 of my 30-day challenge of busting out and busting into your life. I'm so happy to be here with you today. Though I feel like I might have a little cold or something coming on. Not sure. So you have to bear with me if I sound a little stuffy today, because I am. And I had a lot of energy work and body work this week. And I think it sort of stirred things up so it can shake out and get out of my system. And sometimes we need a shakeup to get things moving in our bodies and in our souls. And challenges will do just that. We all have them. And how we deal with them is key to how... how successful and well your life goes in many, many ways. Now, the last line of my opening song, if you listen to it, said, losing yourself is the key to paradise, which is completely true. So when they say losing yourself is the key to paradise, it's losing that ego mind. It's losing that chatterbox. It's dealing with the vows that you've created in your life, the goblins or the gremlins, and finding who you really are underneath of all of that, which we have been created by the circumstances in our lives, particularly growing up as children. Now, my life has been full of many very big challenges, and people who know me personally and my close friends for years have said, oh my goodness, I don't know how you are not in the nut house with all the things that you have dealt with in your life. One of those things would have put me over the edge. And it's really quite remarkable, and it's really pretty true, because I have through some pretty big stuff in my life. And excuse me. I'm sorry. I think that's going to probably go on for the whole show, unless I can magically whisk it away. But again, I'm clearing stuff up. I had a full body reflexology on Monday, and then I had a healing session with the fabulous Lisa Campion yesterday, and then I had Reiki last night. So I'm really moving stuff out here and shifting stuff out of my body, which is good because I need to do that. I have not been drinking enough water and really not getting out and exercising enough. And so when you combine the two of those things, your body tends to get clogged up and congested. And that actually is what has gone on with me, where I have a lymph node under my arm that became very congested, and I had to go get it checked out by the doctor. And it was just that. It was just all congested. And so anyway, you got to take care of yourself. You know, it's funny because when I had my previous job, I drank tons of water all day because I delivered mail. And, you know, especially in the summertime when it's 80 or 90 degrees out there and you're slugging mail around for 6 or 7 hours a day, you drink a lot of water. And it seemed like as soon as I stopped working, all of a sudden I hated the taste of water. So I drink seltzer water, mineral water, everything except plain water. So I have been instructed now for every bottle of seltzer or mineral water I drink, I have to drink a glass of straight plain water or water with lemon. So there we go. And I have my goal is to get up to 8 to 10 glasses a day. So here's another challenge for me. When I think about, oh my God, 8 to 10 glasses a day when I'm not outside working all day, it's unfathomable to me. When I was working, that was not a problem. That was the norm. Anyway, when I was, you know, delivering the mail, because you got to rehydrate when you're out there all the time exercising and that. So one thing that I've really come to embrace challenges in my life. You know, as I was saying, I've had some really big stuff happen in my life that my friends cringe about when they, you know, because they know that they couldn't handle it. And I believe that, you know, we choose a lot of the big stuff to deal with before we come down. We sit with a committee of people or team of people, guides and ascended masters and so forth, and say, okay, this is what I want to deal with in this life. I want to burn this karma, I'm going to create karma in this life, because the choice is yours before you come down. And we all have lifetimes where we create lots of karma, and then we have lifetimes when we have to burn lots of karma. And for me, this lifetime is about burning lots of karma. And fortunately, I've done it in only 51 years. So now I have the whole rest of my life to look forward to. So I'm excited about that. And, you know, part of the reason why I was able to deal with it, because I took it on. But that even being said, some people who may have decided to take it on, maybe couldn't have dealt with it so well. And I have a my former cousin-in-law who also chose to deal with a lot of big karma in this lifetime. She didn't deal with it so well, and she's a little more fragile than I am. And so she got MS and has been in a wheelchair for many, many, many years, and basically has to have somebody meet all of her physical needs. She can't feed herself or bathe herself or any of that, and that's what she chose to burn her karma off. I chose to go through a lot of trauma and to have some of the same things that I did in a past life to other people be done to me. And it wasn't even that I actually did these things to other people, but doing some past life work, I kept my mouth quiet knowing what was going on with the people in the village where I lived. And anyway, so a lot of people suffered greatly by me keeping my mouth shut and actually letting the bad guys into the village, because I was the gatekeeper, and letting them, you know, basically ransack, pillage, and rape and everything to the village people. And so I have paid for that karmically. I took on that karmic debt, decided this was a lifetime I wanted to repay all that karma, bad karma that I created. And so my story, if we go back to the beginning, begins young at childhood. And I'm not sure exactly what age, but I know that the trauma, I do know of trauma that had started as early as the age of 5 or 6. And one of the things that happened to me was my uncle, and this was my mother's brother, kicked me down the stairs at my grandparents' house. And I woke up at the bottom of the stairs, and for many, many years, I could not figure out why I hated this picture that hung at the bottom of my grandparents' stairs. And I was having a craniosacral session one day, and all of a sudden, I went back into this instantaneous, we'll say, time lapse, and I revisited the whole thing happening, because I remember almost nothing before I was 12. And so when that happens, there is almost 99.9% of the time big trauma in your life as a child. And so there were lots of indications as I was older that there were some funky things around my grandfather. And, you know, he used to try to French kiss us, and he would make us take our shirts off and things like that. And, you know, pretty disgusting stuff for a grandfather to be doing to the granddaughters. But, and I don't know if he did it to my sisters, but he definitely did it to me. And I do remember being stuffed in the coat closet, being held by the back of my neck with my face in these smelly farm clothes. And the closet was very, very narrow, and there was really no room between you and the door and the coat. And sometimes rats would get into that closet, because the basement was half dirt. It wasn't completely finished. And being on a farm, there were rats, and the chimney ran through that closet, and the rats would run up the chimney into the closet. Pretty horrifying as a little kid. You know, and that in itself is pretty, pretty tragic. And so as I, you know, grew, as I got older and grew up, I became a people pleaser. And I never expressed what I needed, because there was always a fear of, you know, some sort of punishment, we'll say. And I was really, when I went back to live with my grandparents later on, when I was 19, it was really like being held prisoner. I had become pregnant, and my mother kicked me out of the house a month before I delivered, and I moved in with my grandparents. And while I was still at my mother's, it's funny because I'm drawing a little picture here, and I'm actually looking at it, noticing it. It's a picture of my mother. So that's a confirmation that we're supposed to be chatting about this today. I hadn't planned this conversation today, but here it goes. So I think it's better sometimes. Sometimes I'll write a show and then something else will just come out of me. And I'm going to tie this into challenges and how you deal with things come up in your life, because these are challenges that I have experienced firsthand. And I'm going to share with you how they sort of have molded me and made me who I am. Now, Don Miguel Ruiz says, society domesticates us. It molds us, making us hardened our hearts and shutting down to the whispering of our souls. So every show that I put out here for you is a call to that whispering of your soul. It's a call for you to recognize and to wake up that the face that we put forward into the world is 90% of the time our defense, and it's not really who we are. So I was a people pleaser, and I lived in the people pleaser defense. So what does that mean? That means you do things for other people that you don't really want to do a lot of the times. And you can only do that for so long until you get burnt out. You can do for others when it comes from your core for your whole entire lifetime and never get burnt out. And particularly if you're a team player. But that being said, team players and people need to be thanked. And here, thank you. I appreciate that. So going back to my grandparents and living with my grandparents, my grandfather was tough. He was really tough. Everybody loved him, but they didn't live with him. And I did love my grandfather. However, that being said, he was really tough to live with. He would be sitting in the living room watching TV, and he would yell to my grandmother, who was usually in the kitchen, "Hey, Anna, bring me my socks. Hey, Anna, bring me coffee. Hey, Anna, do this, do that." And at one time, I turned to her and said, "Gran, why do you put up with that?" And she didn't really have an answer. You know, and they were married for over 50 years when my grandfather passed away. And, you know, they went out dancing every Saturday night. I never really saw them talking, you know, like having a normal conversation that couples would do, particularly now in this day and age. They were really from the old school, you know. The guys were out in the garage or in the living room, and the wife was in the kitchen waiting on the man. And that's just the way it was. And it worked for them because, like I said, they were married for over 50 years. And they did things together, you know, right up to the end. They rode motorcycle cross country. They belonged to motorcycle clubs since the day they got married, and participated in lots of motorcycle events and even organized them themselves. They did events where you have things called poker runs and all kinds of different things. And though he treated her kind of harshly, she seemed to be okay with it. Well, I wasn't married to him. He was my grandfather. And it was very difficult living with my grandparents when I had my son, Justin. And I was not allowed to go out. I could go to the supermarket, and I had to be back within an hour. I was not allowed to talk to friends. I was not allowed to talk to boys or have boys over or go out on a date. God forbid something happen again. So I lived that way for 2.5 years until I could not take it anymore. So in that 2.5 year time period, I had run into my high school sweetheart's mother. And she suggested that I stop by the house and that, you know, she'd like to see Justin and blah, blah, blah. And a few weeks later, I did, because I grew up and was really good friends with the family, the whole family. They had two daughters that I grew up with, who I was friends with growing up, and my former husband, who, when he moved into the neighborhood, I was 12 years old. So I spent a lot of time at their house growing up, and I, you know, it was sort of like my second home. And so she had this idea that she was going to get us back together, and she did. And I needed an escape. So, though I did still love him, I did not trust him. And there were several things that happened before we got married that really put the red flags up to show me that I still couldn't trust him. But yet, in my situation that I was in at my grandparents' house, if I didn't get out of prison, I was going to go crazy. And so I got out of prison, but I went to another prison. And I'm not sure if this one was better or worse. I actually think it might have been worse than staying at my grandparents in many ways. Because my former husband is an alcoholic and a drug addict, none of which I knew when we got married. Though I did have some indication that he was drinking about 2 months before we got married, when he came home one afternoon on his birthday, totally smashed. Okay, so I was married for 12 years. The divorce papers were filed at 10 years, and it was really the marriage from hell in many, many, many ways. You know, when you have somebody who is an active alcoholic and who is out driving the car with your child in it while they're intoxicated, is that will shatter your nerves. And he had 5 accidents within a year, and I understand he recently just totaled a car. But anyway, so that being said, that was just one of the things in the relationship. There was a period of time where he decided he wasn't speaking to me. And he literally did not say one word to me for 7 months, living in a 2-bedroom apartment sleeping in the same bed. Did not one word in 7 months. Who wouldn't lose their mind with that? So all of that, and then we had 2 businesses. He didn't work for 2 years. I started a business, and he helped in the business, and then we added a second company, and we were doing very well, but I had no idea how well we were doing, because I still worked for the government full time, and I actually worked anywhere from 50 to 60 hours a week at the government job. And so he was running the businesses, and so I didn't know anything. I didn't see the paperwork. And at one point we hadn't filed taxes in 5 years. And I kept saying, we've got to file taxes. And at one point I finally filed my taxes separately without him. And so anyhow, our bank accounts were frozen. Although, come to find out, the money wasn't in the bank accounts, the money that I didn't know even existed. He was taking all the money that we were making, and he was stashing it. And his mother was keeping it for him, stockpiling all this cash unbeknownst to me, until the second year into the divorce proceedings, where I had hired an accountant to start going through the paperwork and to build books, because he supposedly had no books. And as it turned out, he ended up having three sets of books. So that being said, when the accountant rebuilt the books for just one of the businesses, we discovered that he had cleared $250,000 that year. Now, my kids and I were eating pasta for 6 months. Their shoes had holes in them. The refrigerator was broken. And, you know, the list goes on and on of things that you know, we needed, didn't have. I mean, pasta, literally, just pasta for 6 months. Sometimes not sauce, maybe a little Parmesan cheese and butter. If, you know, it was rough. And for two little kids. But he didn't care. And so when we got divorced, because he didn't have, extortion is not the word, but anyway, he basically was frauding everybody, me, the government, whatever. We would have had to go on to federal court, where he would have probably been prosecuted, and then I would have been left to clean up the mess, which I had no money to do because he had all the money, though he claimed he had none. So I ended up walking away with basically nothing: my kids, my car, my retirement account, and the dog and the cat, and the contents of what was inside of the house, which was nothing fabulous. And a very small deposit for my own house. And that was it. And then the houses were cheap. You know, I bought the house for $120,000. So, you know, the deposit was not big, because if you only have to put down 10%, what does that tell you, right? So that's what I walked away with. Anyhow, challenges, right? I also got a whopping $160 a week for a few years, child support, and then it dropped down to $100 a week. And I paid all the medical expenses. He was supposed to pay half of all the expenses. He never paid, actually, he was supposed to pay the entire premium for the Blue Cross. He never did. He was supposed to pay half of the co-pays. Rarely did that happen. And so I had a, you know, it's big to raise two kids on your own on one salary in the decade of the 2000s. But I did it. Maybe not as, it's certainly not as well as I'd like to, but I did. And so now let's backtrack before the marriage. And because there was more trauma in there too. So my senior year of high school, after my ex-husband and I broke up, because we were high school sweethearts, and he was having an affair with another girl my senior year of high school. So I broke up with him 3 months before graduation, and about 3 or 4 weeks later, the senior class was having a party at one of the beaches, and my best friend, who I'd been best friends with for a long time, says, "Come on, let's go to the party." And he had broken up with his girlfriend at that time. So we go to this beach party, and now I'm totally distraught because of what I just gone through with Ken, and I get intoxicated at this beach party. So I needed help to get to the car. I mean, I couldn't even walk on my own. He puts me in the back seat, and then he proceeds to rape me. I had no means to fight him off because I couldn't even walk to the car. So there's another big trauma. And how I dealt with it was I just stopped talking to him, and I didn't tell anybody what happened. And then after I graduated, I went to see my cousin one weekend at college, and I get there, and her boyfriend shows up, and now all of a sudden, I have no place to sleep, except for in the next door's roommate's room, who happened to be a guy. It was a co-ed dorm. And so I in the room, and I was like, hey, look, nothing's going to happen. And the next thing you know, I get raped again. So fast forward to after the divorce, and there's lots of more things in there. And, you know, also I was saying before when I was pregnant with Justin, my mother tried to force me to give Justin up for adoption because, see, I knew my mother pretty well. And I did not tell anybody in the family before the 3-month mark because I knew that they would try to force me to terminate the pregnancy. And I wasn't going to do that. And backtrack before that, my ex-husband and I in high school, we went steady for 2 years, 2.5 years. And, you know, boys in high school, they pressure you to have sex. We were going out for 9 months, and then finally when I gave in, it was a week before I turned 16, we used protection, actually doubled up, and the protection failed, and I got pregnant. And at that point, I did have an abortion, and I'm spewing it all out to you guys here. I don't know why, but I am. This was not on the plan. So I had an abortion, and because I knew that I had no means to take care of this baby. I was a sophomore in junior in high school. And I couldn't understand how it could have happened since we were so careful, but it did. So getting pregnant with Justin, I was not going to do that again. I was, you know, really, I was distraught. It affected me in a very deep way doing that when I was in high school and making that choice. And so I had Justin, and again, my mother was brutal with trying to make me give this kid up for adoption. She would have social workers come to the house. And then after I had him, I was scared to let her be with him by herself. She took off one day with him for hours. When we had gone shopping together, could not find this woman anywhere in this one store, which wasn't all that big. I don't know where she went or what she did, but she was not in that store for those 2 hours. And my mother was really a depressed creature. And, oh my God, this story could go on for a show for a whole week. Where, you know, my mother basically locked herself in her bedroom when I was about 12. And I had to take care of my siblings. And even prior to that, we had to do a lot of things around the house. And my mother, if we did something out of line, would make us kneel on the hard kitchen floor in front of this picture of the Sacred Heart of Jesus for 3 hours praying because we had to repent. And she wasn't that big of a religious person. But somewhere she got this idea, and I would be the only one that would have to do it. I don't know why, but it was just me. Probably because my brothers would get beatings from my father, but my father did not do that to me. You know, I'd get a hand slap or something across the fanny once in a while. But I was never in real trouble with my father. I'm jumping around a little bit here. So now we fast forward to after the divorce. In the meantime, let me see here. So my ex-husband had a girlfriend. I was in a car accident with a pedestrian, and the pedestrian did not make it through the accident. It was really a totally freak thing. And I was going about 15 miles an hour, and the woman jaywalked out in the middle of traffic and came out from behind a big truck. And there were no charges brought onto me because there was no way to see the woman. And fortunately, the man who was driving the truck testified to that. But you can imagine how that would affect someone. And I went into a pretty big depression. I was in counseling, and thankfully for that. But at the same time, I had been seeing this woman who read playing cards. And so if you know, you can read playing cards pretty much just like you can read tarot cards. What I didn't know back then, although my aunt warned me that I should not be seeing her every week, I did not listen. Because the things that she was telling me, I was so sort of freaked out about that I was desperate to see that what she was seeing would change. Because she kept telling me that my then husband was going to be in a car accident and killed. And that seemed very plausible at the time, because that was the time period when he had had the 5 accidents within a year. And so that seemed like it definitely could be a very strong possibility. So I kept going back thinking something was going to change, and it didn't change. And then I had the car accident with the pedestrian. Her name was Philomena. And I was driving his car. So I went back again saying, this has to be what you saw. She insisted it was not. So I was in fear that, of course, at the time I just had the one child. I was in fear that Justin would be in the car with him when he had the accident. Well, that particular accident never did happen. But I made choices based on seeing her every week that I would not have made had I not. And this is one thing that I am really particular about and in my practice is about educating people on not giving your power away to another person, whether that is a psychic, a card reader, even a doctor. Don't give your power away, people. I did not know that then. I was brought up in a household where we were never taught to make choices. We weren't allowed to speak up for ourselves. You had to do what other people wanted you to do to stay alive, basically. You know, my grandfather was a pretty rough guy. And my father, not so much with us girls, but with my brothers, was pretty hostile. And my brother James, who, if you guys have listened to my show in the past, knows, and if this is your first time listening, my brother James committed suicide August 22nd, 2013. And one of the things he said to me the night before he died was that he tried to reconcile with our father, but Dad didn't seem to, be that active in participating in building a relationship with him. And I totally concurred with him, because the relationship with my dad, if I haven't been the one all these years to be calling him, to be going to see him, there was a period of time where that relationship would have faltered as well. But he went on to say that even though Dad, was so bad to him, that he tried to make peace with him and forgive him, he never really could. And when James was 15, my father beat him so badly with a broom handle, with a broomstick, that it's a miracle that he didn't end up in the hospital. And that day, my brother said, that was the last day our father ever would lay a hand on him. And he left the house. And he was homeless. And he was sleeping in a car near our grandparents' house when my grandparents' best friend found out about it, and she took him in, and he came to live with them. and they lived at the bottom of the hill from my grandparents. You could, there was just a open field between the two houses. And he went on to marry his the daughter of this family, and who actually was the one who, you know, who caused him so much grief and put so many challenges in his life, the last year and a half of his life particularly, which led him to kill himself. And so that's how he dealt with his challenges. So how are you dealing with your challenges? And I have so many other things that happened to me in between all of this. You know, I was held hostage at gunpoint, and lots, you know, crazy, crazy stuff. I was raped a third time when I had blown the discs out in my neck, and I was seeing someone at that time, and they had taken me to the hospital, where the hospital had given me injections of Demerol, and I was totally, he had to carry me into the house. I could not walk. I was not able to hold my head up. I couldn't even get to the bathroom on my own. And he raped me. So again, another challenge. And yet, here I am talking to you today. All these crazy things that have happened in my life. And yet, I'm still here. And I can share my experiences with you. And it's interesting, when I worked with Lisa Campion yesterday, Lisa is a psychic and a healer as well, and she's fabulous. She said to me that, you know, again, like my friends would say, one people would have folded with just one of these big events happening in their life. And here you are. And so I use these things that I've been through to bring a message to all of you. And that is, all going to have challenges in our life. You are going to have challenges in your life. How you deal with those challenges are what makes your life. And you can choose to, you know, sort of, and I did go over the deep end for a while. I thought about committing suicide actually several times in my life. And at one point I did attempt it when my former husband, my senior year of high school, when I found out that he was fooling around with somebody else. I took a half a bottle of sleeping pills, but I slept for 2 hours. Nothing happened. I was kind of disappointed. But of course now I'm totally not. And then there was a second time when I contemplated it. And that's a whole, oh my God, we don't have enough time for all this. Okay, so while I'm in counseling after having the accident with Philomena and her passing away, the counselor decides that my problem was that I didn't have good communication with women because of my relationship with my mother, and that I needed to have a sexual encounter with another woman in his office. So how's that for pushing you over the edge when you're already on the edge of what you feel like is insanity, of losing your mind, of ready to be jumping off the cliff, right? And so at one point, I think I had a nervous breakdown, and I was sitting out on the deck of my house. And I said, you know what? This is not right. There's something wrong with this. And I picked up the phone and I called the head of the organization. And it turns out that this counselor had been knocked for this before. He had already been disciplined for this sort of thing. Of course, that didn't help my peace of mind. In a slight way, it did. Fortunately, I was able to get another counselor. They got me set up with somebody right away who turned out to be fabulous and really did help me get on the track to good mental health. Now, throughout all of this, I was building a house literally building it. We hammered every nail, put up every window, did the plumbing. I did not do the plumbing or the electric. My former husband did that sort of thing with his dad. But I was there putting up sheetrock. I actually plastered every wall in the house. I became the best sheetrocker and mutter, as they call it, in this side of the country. You almost didn't have to sand a spot when I was done. That's how good I was. And it was a 3,000 square foot house, so that's a lot of sheetrock to finish. But so we built this house while all this other stuff is going on. And in the meantime, the ex-husband is still drinking. We move into the house, and which was not complete when we moved in. We move into the house, and 3 weeks after we move in, the furnace burps, and the whole house is filled with soot. Then he loses his job. He gets fired under the suspicion of stealing $25,000, which I never saw. He says he didn't steal it. Whether he did or not, I don't know. Let's see what else. Oh my God! So there's all sorts of other things that weave in and out of my story. But coming back to challenges and how you deal with them, what I have come to learn is, first of all, you've got to take care of yourself, and you have to take care of your mental health. So it's important to get support when you're going through challenges, especially the big stuff. So get support, whether it's through someone like me who does holistic type counseling, or go to a psychiatrist or psychologist, get support. If I hadn't had support, which I didn't actually reach out to get to support through all those things in high school and in early college days, had I not reached out for support at one point, then, I would not be here broadcasting with you for you today. So get support and get good support. And if you go to someone and it doesn't feel quite right, get somebody else. So I like this quote from Josh Shipp, and it is, you either get bitter and you get better. It's that simple. You either take what has been dealt to you and allow it to make you a better person, or allow it, I wrote this wrong. Deal with it and allow it to make you a better person. I did not copy this right. I'm sorry. And the choice does not belong to fate. It belongs to you. So you get the idea. The choice does not belong to fate. It belongs to you. And we have the power to change, because that's our birthright, in every moment of the day. And it's the small choices that you make that add up to how your life really looks and feels. It's those small choices every day. Now, I just recently realized that since my brother died 2.5 years ago, you can imagine that my state of mind shifted. And though I had this urge to want to be happy, somehow I've had this underlying anxiety that life is so short and I want what I want and I want it now. And when I'm not, when I haven't been getting what I want, I've been really cranky about it. And cranky to the people involved in not giving me what I want. And me, of all people, should know better. Because what I have learned in my experience is, sometimes what you want is not what's best for you. And I have two relationships, really good, I shouldn't say really good relationships, but really good examples from relationships that remind me of this all the time when I think about it and look at it. When I had blown my neck out, the fellow that I was seeing, his name was Paul, and he was my best friend and then brother. And this was after I separated from my husband and gotten divorced. I had a hope that Paul and I were going to have a life together because I really, really, really loved Paul. And Paul one day grabbed my then 8-year-old daughter by the throat. Ryan has a condition where her adrenals were damaged when she was 15 months old. And she doesn't metabolize her food. So she needs to eat protein every couple of hours. And this is a challenge with a little kid, right? Because they want to eat sugar and they want to have cupcakes and whatever. And it would, because she didn't metabolize food, it's sort of like a diabetic where you have the diabetic highs and lows with the sugar. So it was very much like that. And she would have what I would call wingdings. And so when the sugar plummeted, because she couldn't control it, and it was difficult on the weekends when she went with her dad, because her dad would not adhere to the doctor's dietetic suggestions and all of that. And so this one day, she starts having a wingding, and Paul decides he's going to nip it in the bud. He grabs her by the throat and kicks her. Now, this is an 8-year-old kid. So out he goes. I said, you know, get out of my house. And we've only got a few minutes left, so I got to make this quick. And a week later we met, and I said, look, what happened back there? Have you ever done something like this before? And he confesses and says, well, yes, I threw my former wife through the kitchen wall because she was drinking and she was out of control. And then I said, wow, not good. And so a couple of years back, I was out on a singles night with an acquaintance, being her wingman, and we run into this couple who happened to be best friends with Paul. Now, that relationship for me was back in the late 90s and the early 2000s. And so a few years ago, we run into this couple, and somehow we get on the topic of motorcycles and that he rides, and he says that he belongs to this motorcycle club. And I said, wow, I dated a guy who belonged to that club. Make a long story short, he turns out that he is best friends with him. And this, he became best friends with him after that we were together. And that he married this woman, Kate, who, this is a whole other part of the story, because we did get back together at one point briefly, but I only saw him with outside of the house and no kids involved, and because we really, really did love each other, and I was hoping that it was going to work out. So he, in the meantime, in this period of time when we were back together, it was very funny where he kept talking about this girl at work, this girl at work, this girl at work. And I had set up a job for him at my cousin's firm where he was an engineer. And so he kept talking about this girl, Kate. And I would go into the office and, you know, and so somebody mentioned it in the office that they seemed like they were very close. And I'm like, okay, so what's the deal? Nothing, we're just friends. To make a long story short, he was sleeping with her. And when I was going to meet him in New York for a long weekend for a motorcycle club event, he didn't want me to go. And because I had to work one of the days, and then I was going to drive up and meet him. And the day that he was returning, we lived near each other. We were only a couple blocks away. I happen to be out in the yard when I see him go by on the motorcycle, and right behind him is Kate on her motorcycle. Well, so you know I went right over there and confronted him. And yeah, they were sleeping together, and they had been an item for a few months, and so he lied. And then he had given me this whole spiel that he would never get married again. So what happens? He marries her. So to wrap this part of the story up, running into his friend at this singles event, he starts asking me questions about how Paul was when we were together. And so to come around to it, as it turns out, Paul and Kate's relationship was turned very violent. And this friend got to the point where he could no longer stay at their house because he could not tolerate the violence that was happening. Bringing this back around to blessings that for things that don't come to fruition, this is one of the blessings for me that I wanted that did not happen. So I have to keep reminding myself that sometimes the universe is generous enough not to give you the things that you're asking for. And I want to talk more about the choices that we make in every day. And going back to my brother's passing and how that was affecting the small things in my life and the choices in the way I was behaving, not getting the things that I want. We're going to come back around to this topic because I know that there's somebody out there listening who this is going to affect deeply. But we are out of time. So I want to let you know that you can find me on my website when I'm off the air, and that's www.cynthiafontaine.com, CynthiaFontaine.com. So like my Facebook page, follow me on Twitter, join me on Pinterest and Instagram. I never post on Instagram, I have to admit, and because I'm just too busy with all my other things. And so like my public stuff and, you know, join me on the show live or whether you listen to the replays, I thank you for that. And you know, the chat room is almost always up if you, you know, want to come on in the chat room. Remember that for future shows. Unless you're listening to the rebroadcast, then, you know, the replay, then obviously it's not a live chat room. So I just want to, with 90 seconds left, I thank you all so very much for being part of my life in the way that you bring your energy here to the show. I want to thank you for showing up in your life, and we're going to talk more about how to show up fully in your life as we continue the show in the next 14 days. I love you all so very much. Have a fabulous and blessed day. Deep in the water somewhere, 'cause the sky. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.